Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Coming up at 8:15, we're going to be talking to Jessica Siegel from Gelson's Markets about her expertise, which is the healthiest way to eat, and it's called the Mediterranean Diet. Love it. And it made me think all week, where in sports, where in art, and where in surgery do we see something simple like the Mediterranean Diet having complex impacts? Seems simple, but boy, is it complicated. 2,500 years ago, the Greeks, who invented algebra, trigonometry, modern civilization, without a bulldozer, without a crane, without a computer, and in 8 years built the greatest building to show off to everybody on top of the Acropolis. It's called the Parthenon, a perfect rectangular building with over 70,000 different blocks of 10-ton blocks of marble stacked on each other, not one piece the same. 8 years, they put it together. Gorgeous. And over the years now, it's crumbling a little bit. It needs to be restored. Go figure out how these guys made this simple building. Let's hear a little bit about what it's like to restore this building with all the modern tools, and yet it's taken over 100 years, and it's not even close to being redone.
But before they can hoist the capital into place, the team must solve a more perplexing problem. On which of the Parthenon's 46 columns does the capital belong? For although the Parthenon may appear to be one giant building kit with interchangeable parts, it's not.
It's not. It's 70,000 different pieces. And the Greeks figured out that if you want to see a straight marble column from a distance, it actually has to be curved. If you want to see a flat foundation, it actually has to be convex.
You think that all the blocks are square in this building, but in fact, if you check it with a set square, you can see that we don't have a right angle here.
And when Porosky places her book on one end of the stylobate, the Parthenon's foundation, it can't be seen from the other end.
Exactly, because there's a curve. There isn't one right angle, and yet the whole building is a rectangle, which is supposed to be nothing but right angles.
This is because there is a curve in the middle of the lines and the stylobate, about 6¾ centimeters high.
Koris and his team have investigated every angle on the Parthenon. And although the building looks straight, they've discovered there's barely a straight line on it.
Can you imagine?
These curves are no accident. They start with the foundation, or stylobate. Each of the 46 columns has a gently curving profile and leans inward. Even the architraves, marble beams that span the columns, as well as the architectural elements above them, are curved. This means that each of the over 70,000 pieces of the Parthenon is unique and fits in only one place.
With a hammer and a chisel. That's how you carve these blocks.
Porosky took on the Herculean task of working out the original positions of 700 scattered blocks from the long inner walls of the temple.
Although the blocks seem the same, each block is different. Each one has its own individual and perceivable information, the cuttings, the heights, and we're talking about differences of a tenth of a millimeter here.
That's about the thickness of a hair.
It's a simple building. It's got four corners. It's got a roof. It's got some columns. There's nothing simple about this building.
The Parthenon is a 20,000-ton, 70,000-piece, three-dimensional jigsaw puzzle. And worse, it's a puzzle that doesn't include instructions. No one has found anything resembling architectural plans.
Where are they written, these things? Where are they writing? Do they have so many papers? We have computers, we have everything. How they are doing and how they communicate, and we're going so quickly in 8 years. I cannot understand. I cannot imagine.
They can't imagine how these guys made it in 8 years, and we have power tools and bulldozers and cranes, and it's over 100 years, and there's nothing close. They can't make a building like this. The Mediterranean, something simple yet complex. Giannis Antetokounmpo, the Greek freak, he's something simple, but he's quite complex. Luka Doncic, he's got a career ahead of him that looks a lot like LeBron James. He's from the Mediterranean, Adriatic Sea area. He's simple, but he's quite complex. Who led the charge? For me, it was Toni Kukoc. Toni Kukoc from Croatia, from the Mediterranean area. The first to lead the charge of simple and complex.
As the Bulls defend their NBA titles and hope for a three-peat, there are many unanswered questions regarding next year's roster. The list of possible free agents includes some household names and runs eight shallow. That uncertainty, combined with salary cap maneuvering to bring in European star Toni Kukoc, has fueled much speculation in Chicago.
His team, and I think that that's going to be our direction as we go down through the years. Now, Kukoc is a big kid. We don't know if we'll sign him, but in all probability, if he does come, he's 6'10".
Yeah, you're going to sign him, okay, because you won three rings with Scottie and Michael Jordan, but you didn't win them the second time, those second three rings without Toni Kukoc.
Me getting caught up in the numbers game with him, it's easy to get in that little, well, I hate him and dislike him. You know, I didn't really dislike him, but I really didn't like him as a player. I respect him as a player now. He can pass, he can shoot, he can run, he can dunk, do everything necessary for a good player to be in the league. And he deserves to be in the NBA.
He earned that respect because he could do it all. Simple moves. Grew up as a ping pong star. What does ping pong have to do with playing basketball? Everything. Because of spacing the floor, hand-eye coordination, speed. That ping pong ball goes faster than a hummingbird.
Kraus talked all the time about how great Kukoc could be, which rubbed some American players the wrong way. Kukoc's first taste of NBA basketball came in 1992 at the Olympic Games in Barcelona.
So they picked on him. Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen, the American brat, and Charles Barkley. They said, all right, we got to play Croatia. They got a star, and we're going to destroy him.
But in their next game against Croatia, Scottie Pippen and Michael Jordan grabbed the spotlight. With the focus on their matchup with one of Europe's best players, Toni Kukoc.
Major storyline that carries into this game involves Toni Kukoc, second-round pick of the Chicago Bulls. Back in 1989, the Bulls made a strong push to sign him last season.
Because they could see the Mediterranean can generate more than just a diet, Jessica Siegel. It can generate Toni Kukoc.
To sign him last season.
At that time, general managers in the league were trying to come up with gems, you know, make their discoveries overseas. And Kraus thought this guy could play in the NBA.
While Jordan and Pippen had been winning back-to-back titles, Chicago GM Jerry Kraus had been publicly wooing Kukoc to join the Bulls.
So Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen took it personally. So now they're in the Olympics and they know their GM is going after this guy. They're going to try and destroy poor Toni Kukoc.
Kraus was recruiting this guy and talking how great he was. You know, that's like a father who has all his kids and now he sees another kid that he loves more than he loves his own. So we were not playing against Toni Kukoc. We were playing against Jerry Kraus in a Croatian uniform.
Oh, this poor guy. Can you imagine? They're going to gang up on him.
But unfortunately for the real Toni Kukoc, he was now the target of the world's two best defensive players.
They were debating who was going to guard him. No, I got it.
I'm looking at Michael and Scottie, and they're ready for, like, blood. Like, man.
We knew the world was going to be watching. We knew everyone wanted to see what Toni Kukoc was like, and we were going to give him the worst experience he ever had on the basketball court.
We're going to throw a cheeseburger into the Mediterranean diet.
Pippen drew the initial assignment of shadowing Kukoc and harass the Croatian from the opening whistle.
It was hard to run across the half court without a ball. And with the ball, it was just, here, somebody else get it.
Toni definitely wasn't getting a shot up, and he wasn't going to score.
Kukoc is nothing for four, and he's contributed nothing.
We wanted to go guard him on the bench.
We're going to go get him on the bench. That's how much they wanted him.
Kukoc is called for the offensive foul, and the pressure continues.
And after Pippen wore Kukoc down, it was Jordan's turn.
Kukoc, stolen by Jordan. He reads it better than anyone.
Them dudes were all over him.
Don't you love hearing Chick Hearn's voice? Miss him.
I had a question for my teammates during the game. Like, what is going on? What, do you not see that they're really trying to get you off the court? And I'm like, so what? I guess that's how NBA game is played.
Pippen, Jordan, and the Americans cruise to another victory. This one by 38 points.
But it didn't stop Tony Kukoc. He only got tougher. So here's Reggie Miller guarding him. This is a classic Tony Kukoc in the NBA.
4 seconds, three. Here he comes. Fade away.
Yes, Miller hits a big one. It's not a three.
With 0.8 of a second remaining, Reggie Miller takes the bows at the stadium in Chicago.
Reggie Miller with 25. They just kept it down.
Yeah, except you forgot one thing. There's still 0.8 seconds left, and the ball is in Tony Kukoc's hands.
Coach comes back in for the Bulls. And there's the delay game warning. It is a 2-point Pacer lead with 0.8 of a second, so you got to catch it and shoot it.
Oh.
Tony got it. Put it up. Look out. He got it!
That's right.
Is that a three? It's a three. They win. Bulls win. Tony Kukoc, 0.8 seconds. Yes! Holy mackerel, the Bulls 16th in a row. Ho-ho!
He has an amazing belief in himself. So what's the connection with the sport and the diet? Listen to Steve Kerr, a teammate of Tony Kukoc. We had to bleep out a couple of things he said here, but talking about a memorable eating experience before a big game for the Chicago Bulls, Steve Kerr, the point guard, Tony Kukoc, the forward. This is just such a great memory. Here's Steve Kerr talking about Tony Kukoc.
A quick story about Tony Kukoc, that when he came over to the NBA, first game of the season, I asked him if he wanted to go grab a bite to eat. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, kind of, you know, 4 hours before the game. And he orders this feast. I mean, salad, appetizer, huge plate of pasta, chicken, glass of red wine, a dessert like tiramisu. And then he follows it up with an espresso. And I'm just in awe. I'm sitting there looking at him like, Tony, This is your pregame meal? He goes, in Europe, we eat a lot. We drink a little wine. We have espresso. We go back to hotel, take beer. Then we go. Hey, all right, here we go. Oh, wait, was I allowed to say that?
I got
to
honestly say, I did not see that story going.
If you didn't hear that the first time, he's talking about what went in his mouth at the top of his GI tract and what comes out the bottom of his GI tract.
A quick story about Tony Kukoc, that when he came over to the NBA, first game of the season, I asked him if he wanted to go grab a bite to eat. It's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, kind of, you know, 4 hours before the game. And he orders this feast. I mean, salad, appetizer, huge plate of pasta, chicken, glass of red wine, a dessert like tiramisu. And then he follows it up with an espresso. And I'm just in awe. I'm sitting there looking at him like, Tony, this is your pregame meal? He goes, in Europe, we eat a lot. We drink a little wine. We have espresso. We go back to hotel, take beer. Then we go. Hey, all right, here we go.
Oh,
wait, was I allowed to say that?
I got to honestly say, I did not see that story.
There's your Mediterranean diet. All right, coming up next, we'll get into it. The real Mediterranean diet with my favorite expert on the Mediterranean diet from Gelson's, the great Jessica Siegel. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warrior Show here on ESPN LA 710. Oh, Steve Paulette. The Weird Al, right? What a talent. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. I'm so excited to talk to the great Jessica Siegel. Jessica, thanks so much for waking up early to be with us.
My pleasure. I'm so excited to talk to you guys.
I want to ask you a question. I hold in my hand, it was delivered in the mail, a wealth of healthy options from Gelson's new Jessica's Plant Power Salad, new Jessica's Lucky Life Salad. Do you write all the words here, or does someone actually come in and write these things for you?
Most of what you see, I do write. We do have somebody who helps me out and, you know, checks my grammar and stuff. But really, I do. I write a lot of my own materials. I have a newsletter about nutrition that I write every month. I write my own recipes and lots of promotional materials.
When you combine poetry, the art of writing, with food, you get things like crispy cream. How could it be crispy and creamy? I love that, right? So somehow this is a plant power salad and it's a lucky life salad. I just love it. You eat this and you're going to be lucky. Wow.
Absolutely. Well, those two salads are brand new. I mean, you might have heard the words, you know, plant-powered, plant-based, plant-forward, because those are, like, really important to people right now. And it's actually part of the Mediterranean diet, which I hope we're going to talk about.
We are. I can't wait to talk about the Mediterranean diet. But I'm looking at this not plant power. To me, it looks like a power plant. So I'm thinking about Long Beach and the smokestack. Thank you very much. And I'd love to eat something that makes you lucky. You should call it the Clint Eastwood salad. Are you feeling lucky? Remember that scene from Dirty Harry? That was great. All right, Jessica, talk to us. Who are you? Where'd you grow up? What's your father do for a living? And how did you become a dietitian?
All right. Well, so I did grow up in L.A. I grew up shopping at Gelson's, but I did go to UC Berkeley for all of my schooling.
Did you eat a Top Dog?
I walked by Top Dog very often.
Best hot dog in America.
I admit I never stopped and ate the hot dogs. Uh-huh. But I was very much influenced by the food culture in Berkeley. As you know, it's very strong. California cuisine was kind of invented there. Mm-hmm. And I became a food lover there. And, you know, I chose to study nutrition because I thought everybody eats. You can always relate to people about food and eating and share that passion and excitement with people. And you can help people that so much that way. And I, you know, also fell in love with grocery shopping. I lived right behind a terrific grocery store and I would go there every day. And then, you know, when I was in graduate school for public health, which, you know, is all about disease prevention and using food and nutrition to help healthy people stay healthy and prevent many of the diseases associated with aging, I loved it when I would go to parties and people would ask me about nutrition. And I just thought to myself, if I could sit in a supermarket all day long and talk to people about nutrition, that would really just be my dream job. So I set my sights on Gelson's because I have very high standards, and Gelson's is a store that has extremely high standards and customers who really value food and good quality ingredients. So I thought we'd be a perfect match. And I've been here actually over 18 years doing this as a dietitian. And it's just
incredible.
It's perfect because people make so many food decisions in the grocery store. So here I am, right where you need me to help guide you to make those great decisions. And I've got lots of resources for people in the stores, too.
I don't know if you've been listening to the show, but to me, what you're feeling is the simplicity. And you can't argue with the facts. They live longer, less cancer. It's just the lifestyle, the way they eat. In the Mediterranean, it's simple, the ingredients, and yet it has complex results. And I couldn't wait to think about where do you see such thinking in the world of art and in sports and in surgery. And I keep talking about the Parthenon. It looks like a simple rectangular building, and yet nothing could be more complicated than this building. And we're learning that as we try to restore the damn thing. What is it about the Mediterranean diet? Teach us what the Mediterranean diet is and why does it have such a powerful impact on our body?
Well, yeah, it really is so amazing. And by the way, I really see my job as helping to translate all this complex information into simple and doable steps, right? I think people feel very overwhelmed. You hear so much complicated advice about eating and nutrition. Don't eat this, don't eat that. And I am not that kind of dietitian. I'm not a diet dietitian. I don't count calories or anything like that. I really help people see the big picture. And that's what the Mediterranean diet does too. You know, it's just, I think you probably also read it was just rated best overall way to eat by U.S. News and World Report for the third year in a row. But actually, we've been using it at Gelson's for over a decade. We actually partnered with the Barbra Streisand Women's Heart Center at Cedars-Sinai way back then to bring the diet to our customers. And we use it as our framework for everything. Especially me. So it's not a fad at all. It is, you know, something, a traditional eating pattern and lifestyle that people have been living and eating for a very long time. So
I have to give a shout out to Hal Lifson for putting us together. How do you know Hal Lifson?
He's a customer. He's a very devoted Gelson's customer. And so I'm a resource for customers. Customers can call me and come see me here in Century City. And I'm here to help everybody be healthier.
Wow.
And so he came to me, and he also thought that you and I would really be a good match. And
it's amazing. All right. So I want to know, I want to go a little bit back to your Cal roots. And want to know if you ever heard this classic speech before on the steps of Sproul Hall, 1962, I think.
Well, I ask you to consider, if this is affirmed, and if the Board of Regents are the Board of Directors, and if President Kerr, in fact, is the manager, and I tell you something, the faculty are a bunch of employees, and we're the raw materials, but we're a bunch of raw materials that don't mean to be have any process upon us, don't mean to be made into any product, don't mean to end up being bought by some clients of the university, be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone or human being.
One of the greatest speeches of all time. Here he finishes it up. Mario Savio on the steps of Sproul Hall at Berkeley.
There's a time when the operation of the machine becomes so odious, makes you so sick at heart, that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus, and you've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Ugh, passion. This is, do you know from Mario Savio on the steps of Sproul Hall?
Well, he was a little bit before my time, but yes, I definitely, I do know.
So was there a moment in your life where it all started, where you said, I can be an accountant, I can be a lawyer, I can do, nope, this is what I want to do with my life. Was there an aha moment?
I think it was much more of a slow evolution where just things just started to really come together because, you know, frankly, I was a very picky eater growing up. I did not eat lettuce until I was 20 years old, and that was all about, that was in Berkeley. I was influenced, you know, my eating was influenced in Berkeley. My passion for food and really came to me then. It took 20 years, you know, but everything I did, all of the jobs that I had when I was in school, everything came together. I mean, one of my first jobs was as a baker at Ben and Jerry's, you know, and but even that plays into my experience, and it helped me become the dietitian that I am. So I don't think I had an aha moment. Looking back, it's just very easy to see how all the little things that I've done and the experiences that I've had and all the travels that I've done. I've been to Spain 13 times. And so the food there very much influences, you know, my cooking and the flavors that I like. And, you know, the Mediterranean diet really uses a lot of those ingredients and flavors. But I do want to tell you about the beauty of the Mediterranean diet, because a lot of people say to me, like, what if I don't like hummus? Can I still follow the Mediterranean diet? But I always say yes, because it's not one of those strict, you know, tuna on Tuesday, turkey on Thursday kind of plans. It's a framework for healthy eating. So one of the main beauties of it is that it's flexible and it's varied. So you can eat, you know, Mexican food, Chinese food, American food, as long as you're following some of the important principles of the diet's framework.
Jared Abrams, who produces the show, wants to know if he eats the chicken tenders. Is that part of the Mediterranean diet?
Well, what I will say is that actually no foods are restricted on the Mediterranean diet.
Okay.
So it's not like an everyday food. So the Mediterranean diet is kind of structured by foods that you eat daily, weekly, and monthly. So an example of weekly foods is dessert. 2 to 3 times a week, you can actually have dessert.
Mm.
And so, yeah, so it's not a restrictive plan. It's kind of a thing, the more you think of it more as like you emphasize certain foods regularly and then you can include everything. So, yes, chicken tenders from Gelson's can be part of it, but it shouldn't be a regular part.
I want to ask you about pairing. So in medical school, I took nutrition at Columbia, and one of the coolest things I learned was that in an egg, the iron in the yolk is ferrous sulfate, and you can't absorb it in your gut as ferrous sulfate, the iron. But if you have your egg with ascorbic acid, which is grapefruit juice or orange juice, the acid turns the ferrous into ferric sulfate, and you absorb all the iron in the egg because you had it with orange juice or grapefruit juice. That would like lit me up in terms of the pairings of food and the benefits. And then I sculpt in marble, so I go to Italy. And in Italy, I learned, because I'm in a studio in the backwoods of Carrara in the hills there, I learned all about this is the sauce with linguine. This is the pesto that you have with a different shape macaroni, that you pair the sauce with a different type of pasta for all kinds of reasons. And then in France, they pair different rustic breads with the different cheese, it's different wine with fish, white wine with fish, red wine with meat. There's pairings in food. It's like a giant chemistry experiment. Do you have a favorite pairing when you put together any of the foods, the salads that you put together? Do you love two things or three things that go together?
Well, yeah, I do. And I do just want to also mention that is why what you're saying is like how complex your body is and how amazing it is a good reason to eat a big variety of foods, right? You don't have to, you know, make it a chemistry experiment and be all scientific, but eating a variety is really the best way to ensure that you're going to get all the nutrients you need.
Mm-hmm.
But so moving on though to my favorite pairings, I definitely love olive oil, and the research with olive oil and how the synergies with cooking exist to make the food more nutritious when you cook with olive oil, that's really fascinating too. There's a Spanish sauce called sofrito, and there's actually research studies done just on this sauce, and it's a slow cook sauce with olive oil and tomatoes and onions and garlic and bell peppers, and as it cooks, it releases more and more of the nutrients, and the nutrients go back and forth between the oil and the vegetables, and so it's just really fascinating how those synergies work. And when I create some of my salads, I always like to add, you know, a little special ingredients. So I do a lot of sweet and savory pairings. So I always might add like a little bit of fruit. So for example, my Lucky Life salad that you mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's got some really bitter greens like kale and collard greens, but I add Envy apples, which are kind of sweet and tangy and also crunchy, and dried cherries, which give it a really nice complex flavor. And then there's the Marcona almonds from Spain and the black lentils. So there's all these really nice flavors and textures, a pop of sweet, a pop of savory and bitter and salty. And I think it all comes together really nicely.
Well, you can tell that you learned how to create a revolution by going to Berkeley, and you brought that to the food industry. I have one problem with Gelson's. Can I tell you? Maybe you can help fix this.
Okay, let's see what I can do.
I was in the south of France on a bicycle trip, and I stayed at this beautiful hotel right on the water, the French Riviera, called the Metropole, and I ordered dessert. They brought me a little dish, greatest dessert I ever had in my life. What was in the dish? Dark chocolate gelato with a scoop of dark chocolate sorbet. Okay? I got to tell you, when you combine chocolate gelato and chocolate ices or chocolate sorbet, your head explodes. It's so delicious. Okay? So I couldn't wait to come back home, and I bought dark chocolate. Haagen-Dazs has this Belgian chocolate that's just beyond, and I would love to have it with a scoop of chocolate sorbet. So there it was. Ciao Bella makes the greatest sorbet, and they had chocolate sorbet. I just was loving this. And then one day, they stopped carrying the chocolate sorbet from Ciao Bella. So I asked the manager, and I love my Gelson's. I asked them, what's up with that? Oh, I'm sorry, it's the middleman. This is what they decide to ship out. And I pleaded with them, can't you get the chocolate? No, you couldn't get it. And every manager that I ran into, they said no. Is that the case? I mean, some middleman decides what goes in the freezer? Why can't I get the chocolate sorbet from Ciao Bella?
You know, Dr. Clapper, I got to tell you, we are all about customer service. And if we carry Ciao Bella, I'm sure there's a way for us to special order you the dark chocolate sorbet.
Free orthopedic surgery for the rest of your life, Jessica Siegel. If you get chocolate sorbet back into Gelson's, oh, my God, you're going to get a free hip replacement out of this.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, I want to thank you very much. You're really terrific. Because you could tell you care about us and you're taking care of us, and no better as a doctor to have someone like you who's actually in the prevention business. Forget about what pill I should take. I have swelling. I have pain. I'm falling apart. Someone like you, Jessica, who comes along and says, do what I say and you won't need Dr. Clapper in the future. This is a beautiful thing. So thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. My pleasure. And if people want to meet me, I'm heading to our Manhattan Beach store after this. I'll be there from 11 to 2 sampling my brand new salads.
Okay.
Or if you're not near Manhattan Beach, you can head to any Gelson's between 11 and 2 today, and we're doing sampling of my new salads too.
I'll be there. Can't wait. I'm going to the one in Encino. Thank you very much.
All right.
All right, Jessica. Thanks so much. And please work on the chocolate sorbet for me. I appreciate that.
I'll hook you up.
Okay. All right, young lady. Talk to you later. That's the great Jessica Siegel from Gelson's, an expert in the Mediterranean diet. What a pleasure. All right, Warriors, coming up next, we got to talk about the Mediterranean diet in football with the great Reed Fowler joining me in studio. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show. The number is 877-710-ESPN. Welcome back, Weekend Warriors. Yes, I'm a doctor. Dr. Clapper. Don't you love when Kobe says it? My first day at Cedars in 1983. Fresh out of medical school. You don't know anything, trust me, when you fresh out of medical school. You can pass the test, but you're not taking care of patients. First day at the hospital. I'm on call for the ICU in surgery. Ugh. The nurse looks at me and says, you, what's your name? I got to write it on the board to tell the nurses who to call. I said, it's my first day here. How can I be on call? Fortunately, I did all these rotations at St. Luke's Roosevelt, so I knew what to do with ICU patients. She says, what's your name? I got to write it down. I said, it's Dr. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper.
She goes, okay, let me write it down. K-L-A-P-P-A-H. Clapper. Is that right? I go, yeah, that's right.
Dr. Clapper.
That's right, Kobe Bryant. Clapper.
Dr. Clapper.
Steve Paulette, you're the greatest. All right, the great Reed Fowler is here. Nobody knows more about handicapping games. And I want to talk about, we talked already about Minnesota-San Francisco and Tennessee versus Baltimore, which is going to happen today. I can't wait to get home to watch those games. And I can't wait to figure out what I'm going to eat while I'm watching these games. The Mediterranean diet's a good idea. Avocado. You know what the secret at El Tarasco? I'm giving away the secret to the best guacamole you'll ever have, because you're going to have guacamole today, I hope. I was there. I mean, I love El Tarasco, sitting at the counter. Why is this? It's just simple. There's no onions in it. There's no sauce. It's just green avocado. Why is it so good? I shouted at the guy. He looked at me and he says, I tell you the secret. I go, what's the secret? It's avocados. I go, I know, duh, that's what guacamole is. He says, a little salt, and then as he turned his head, he said, aceto. And that was it. He's like, poof, he went off into the vapor. I go, aceto? That's vinegar. Aha. Now, You know why people put vinegar into their guacamole? Because it keeps it from turning brown. This I later discovered. Like lime juice or lemon would do that too. But they used vinegar. But here's the secret. The vinegar has a flavor. You put a tablespoon of vinegar, not a lot, a splash, into the guacamole with the salt and just really soft avocados. It's the best, creamiest guacamole you're ever going to have. Forget adding the onions and the salsa and all the cockamamie stuff people put in. You want the best guacamole, put a splash of vinegar into it. That's pretty Mediterranean there. Jessica would be proud of me. All right, Reed Fowler, tomorrow's games. As an orthopedic surgeon taking care of big-time athletes and weekend warriors, which I love both. I love living in both worlds. I love crispy and I love cream. The Kansas City Chiefs are playing the Houston Texans. Here's a tale of two orthopedic injuries that I love. J.J. Watt ripped his pec major muscle right off the bone 8 weeks ago. We're able to suture the tendon, attach it to these darts, these anchors, and nail it into his bone 8 weeks later. Thank you, he's playing again. Patrick Mahomes, during this same season, dislocates his kneecap and doesn't need surgery because of our beautiful tools, the MRI, giving us insight of his structures are fine. There's all kinds of reasons, which I can spend 2 hours just explaining, why the right course of action was to leave him alone. And look at that. He's good as new. He's playing in this game. So I got two orthopedic injuries on both sides of the line. From a handicapping position, your expertise, Reed Fowler, what's going to happen tomorrow with Houston, Kansas City, and later we'll get into the Seattle, Green Bay.
Right, kind of tying in what you were talking about in terms of art and going to Italy. It's the David and Goliath, right? It's Houston coming in, who has one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, Deshaun Watson, how he can single-handedly take over a game like he did last week against Buffalo and really get knocked down seven times but stay up that eighth time and, you know, continue that game. But if you look at Patrick Mahomes and what he's been able to do, and even J.J. Watt, is they provide this energy on their teams, this spark, and you know, looking at all of the quarterbacks, we talked about the first couple on Saturday, but now on Sunday, a team really has the identity of their quarterback and coach. Hmm. And when you look at that with Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid after a bye, Andy Reid with rest advantage, when you look at all of these numbers and you take a holistic position at it, he's absolutely amazing. And now at home, at Arrowhead this season, the Chiefs are winning games by 11 points. And so when you have a Houston team coming in with a pretty bad offensive line, with one guy and Deshaun Watson that can hopefully win you the game, it's going to be tough. Now, Will Fuller, who's also had his fair share of hamstring, groin injuries, nagging injuries, he's supposed to play on Sunday, barring any sort of, you know, freak accident from now until then. When he's on the field, Deshaun Watson and that entire team, all of their numbers spike in terms of efficiency, big play, explosive rating, everything. So when you look at that, you think maybe they can cover that spread. But Kansas City, when you look at all the teams that are here, they have had the best momentum outside of Philadelphia, and they were out. But you look at all the teams that are still in, Kansas City is going to be one of the tougher teams to beat, and it's my favorite to go to the Super Bowl.
What's fascinating, though, when I listen to you talk, Reed Fowler, what's fascinating to me is you have all – this is like being a surgeon. You have all the numbers crunched. Mm-hmm. And the detail that in that computer of yours, I can only imagine, you know, yards gained after they catch the ball, sure. All these like beautiful, subtle numbers for you to play around with. But what I love is you're really in the intangible business.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're in the Deshaun Watson. So if you broke your leg and it was the kind of break that I didn't need surgery, I just put you in a cast. The healing of a fracture occurs through something called callus. Not like in the palm of your hand, a blister becomes a callus, but actually the way the body creates new bone. If you look at that normal healing of making callus for a fracture under the microscope, you see lots of scary cells building more bone. Mm. If you look at the worst cancer that can happen in bone, osteogenic sarcoma, under the microscope, you see lots of scary cells on fire. under the microscope, those two cells, fracture, normal healing, and worst cancer ever, they look the same. And when I was studying cancer surgery, which I did a lot of early in the back in the day for me, I'd ask the pathologist, all right, we're going to have to amputate this kid's leg. This one is a fracture. How do you tell the difference? Because they, to me, they just look the same under the microscope. How come this is cancer? You know what the pathologist said to me? Because it is. Thank you. What do you mean, because it is? He said, Robert, these cells look angrier to me. What the hell? It's an intangible that the pathologist starts to develop that something's not right. Like a good, this is why I never want a doctor to retire, because what they have in their head ain't in the book.
Right.
And that is what you are. It's this intangible, like look out for Deshaun Watson. Why? Just look out for him.
Yeah.
Like you almost can't put it to words, but your heart, your sense is special. Here I am focusing on Patrick Mahomes and you're focusing on Deshaun Watson.
Yeah. Well, you look at all these quarterbacks, right? From Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, Deshaun Watson, Patrick Mahomes, but Lamar Jackson, you talk about why did these guys, when they were first drafted, slip so far from what they're doing now. If we had a do-over, these guys would go in the top two or three picks. But it's looking at what do these guys do outside of the context. And what we're always trying to do is play the margins, trying to find, okay, well, all the stats say one thing, but why does something else happen?
All right, we have to take a break quickly. Yeah. Green Bay, Seattle, who you got?
It's going to be Green Bay, Lambeau Field.
We leave you that. Coming up next, last segment, tell you about next week. And I got to tell you a story as well. You're listening to the one and only Weekend Warriors Show here on ESPN LA 710. On the podcast, you can't really hear this beautiful music. And not a word will be spoken. It's purely instrumental. It's a music that really touches me right in the heart. The group is called The Sandals. And they made this music for Bruce Brown in 1964 to be the soundtrack for one of the greatest movies ever made called The Endless Summer. Traveling around the world, Robert August, Mike Hinson, and Bruce Brown looking for the perfect wave. And they found it. They found it in South Africa. The wave. Now they call it Jeffrey's Bay. But in those days, they called it Cape St. Francis. When I go to Hawaii, there's a perfect wave for me. It's about a half a mile out off the south shore of Oahu. And I met Jerry Lopez out there. Him and me on a terrible day. But that's why that terrible day meant it wasn't crowded. There wasn't anybody else out there. I was desperate, so I go every day when I'm in Hawaii to surf. And Jerry Lopez makes magic with the wave, whether there is a wave there or not. And as God would have it, the two of us were out there together. It's a day I'll never forget for the rest of my life. Catching waves with Jerry Lopez. That's like writing a song with Paul McCartney. Or doing a surgery with Frank Job. Incredible to be with someone of that magnitude. Remember what Jerry Lopez said. In life, if you can buy it with money, it's cheap. Those are the things you want. Things that are priceless. Things that are timeless. Treat yourself. Go on YouTube. Go on Google. And look at the Parthenon. In Athens, sitting on top of the Acropolis. It looks like this beautiful rectangular building built in ancient times, 2,500 years ago. With simple tools, they made something that in 2020 they can't even restore because it's so complicated. 70,000 different pieces of 10-ton blocks of marble. Not one piece the same. Incredible. Speaking of the Mediterranean, I leave you with Volare, which means I'm singing and I'm flying. And it doesn't sound better than this, because he wrote it and he's singing it. Until next week, I'll see you on the radio.